Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Of the National Championship Game Day edition of the Rob Brown Show goes now. It's ESPN Upstate. I am Rob. Lonzo is on the board today and joining us now on the show as he does on Mondays, to talk a little South Carolina football. We may throw a pepper in with a couple of national championship questions at the end. From the Greenville News, the young man they call Corey Diaz joins us on the show. Corey, happy game day, big fella. How we feeling, my man?
Appreciate you, man. We're impatiently counting down the hours, man, for this evening. Really excited about getting to watch the final game of the college football season. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that coming up in a minute, but obviously we got to put a little cap in the final, the end of South Carolina season was a big win over North Carolina in a border war in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. But there's been some moves since then. We've had Shane Beamer's first departure from his coaching staff. We got a big transfer in from NC State earlier today. What's been the latest, the biggest couple of headlines you think in the last couple of days that impact the 22 season?
Sure. I mean, I think, what I have found most interesting about Terrell Dawkins deciding to join South Carolina, transfer from North Carolina State, is, you know, potentially have been his position coach, and Mike Peterson was not on staff when he committed to play at South Carolina. To me, what that tells you is this is the kind of kid that you want in your football program, because he's not committing to a specific position coach. He's actually committing to the vision, the direction, and the culture of the football program. He talked about I've seen interviews with him discussing his conversations with Clayton White and as well as Shane Beamer. And that's a kid that you want, in your football program, because it's not going to be a kid that, obviously he is a transfer, but to me that signals a kid that's probably going to be here until his either playing days are over, or he, foregoes a year or two or what have you to enter the NFL draft. And again, when you talk about losing Ngakoue and Aaron Sterling at both of the end positions, I mean, there was a lot of need at that position, and it was big for South Carolina to get him to commit and, not to sort of deviate away from the football field, but to me, Aaliyah Boston, she recorded her ninth straight double-double yesterday, something that has not happened with the South Carolina women's basketball program in, I believe, 42 or 43 years. I don't know what more needs to happen. If there's listeners out there who are South Carolina fans who have not gotten to the Colonial Life Arena yet this season to check out this women's basketball team, I don't know what more needs to happen to convince you to go down there and get it, because I tell you, man, just about every time you walk in that building, something historic is happening. And what Dawn Staley and her team just continues to do every time they get out on the floor, man, it's just impressive. It's incredible. And, there's another game coming up on Thursday night against a team that's probably not going to be in the top 25, but ended the week in the top 25. So it's going to be another quality game. So Looking forward to that. I'm going to be in the building again for that. So, just a lot of really good things are happening in Columbia right now.
We're talking to Corey Diaz from the Greenville News. He covers South Carolina athletics over there in Columbia. As far as roster moves, we looked the other day, and again, we saw a transfer in this morning. Big defensive tackle from NC State is being added to the roster. I think that was absolutely going to be labeled a position of need for the Gamecocks. Jason Brown out. He's now headed to Virginia Tech to be a Hokie, but there's going to be good competition in the quarterback room even without Jason Brown on the roster next year. Obviously, Spencer Rattler is the big get, but there's a lot of competition. I have said a couple of times, Corey, that Shane Beamer is doing something I think you have to do if you want to get ahead in recruiting from this position in history moving forward, and it is to have great relationships with kids and convince them that the school will be able to do as much for you as they want you to do for the school, et cetera. Have you seen Shane Beamer working on relationships as kind of being a priority moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. And just with the position that you were just talking about, Rob, I mean, look, so you have a kid in Braden Davis who's been, committed to come play at South Carolina for, what seems like just forever. He was a commitment for a long time, come in and play quarterback. And not only does Shane go out and get Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma, a former five-star prospect, to come transfer and sign with South Carolina and come in and play. But then, right before signing day, you get Tanner Bailey, who, I believe he's from Gordo, Alabama, which I have been to before. It is a one-stop light town about 40 miles northwest of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So if you blink, you miss it if you drive through. But, they have a really good football program there. I've covered a couple of games when I was interning at the Tuscaloosa News many moons ago. So you bring in this kid into the fold too. So, again, I think that's a really clear example of just the kind of relationship, like coach to player relationship, that Shane just continues to build with a lot of these kids that he's, getting to sort of buy into, obviously the competitive culture of what they're trying to build. And, I saw an interview that Shane was on, I believe it was the Pat McAfee show a couple of weeks ago. Just a couple of days after the bowl game. And, that was something that Pat asked Shane about was, how do you get your program up to a level of a Georgia or an Alabama, and that was the very specific thing that Shane talked about was we have to formulate this culture of competition where, we do sign two or three or four, four-star recruits at one position and have them buy into the idea of coming in and competing, because it's not only about you, it's about the team, and it's about making the team better.
Corey Diaz writes for the Greenville News, covers the Gamecocks for TGN. Looked at the 2022 South Carolina football schedule released last week, Corey, and South Carolina kind of thrown into the thick of it right off the bat. They open on the 3rd against Georgia State, but then not only back-to-back SEC games in week 2 and 3, but they open up on the road at Arkansas before they come back home to take on what I assume is going to be another very good Georgia team. What's the focus for Shane Beamer as far as knowing that this team has to come out of the gate hot? I mean, if you lose a couple up front, you do get Charlotte and then SC State back-to-back weeks after that, so a little recovery time before you got to go on the road to Kentucky. But it looks to me like, if South Carolina can come out of those first three at 2-1, they got a chance to – I mean, certainly I think bowl eligibility isn't an expectation but a demand next year, right?
I mean, I would say, Rob, right now, as you and I are talking on January 10th, 2022, a little less than 8 months out from kicking the season off, I think if the team next year doesn't make a bowl game, it would be a huge disappointment. I mean, look, again, and it's not just about Spencer Rattler. It's not just about Austin Stogner. It's not just about Terrell Dawkins. It's not just about these kids that they signed. When you look at if you would have looked at South Carolina's roster a year ago from today versus the roster that they have listed on their website as of right now today, if you look at those two different rosters and think, you know, there's not much talent difference, there's not much difference, then you're kind of in the dark a little bit, because I mean this group right now, and again, there's going to be more movement, there's probably going to be some that decide to leave, you know, there's going to be probably more transfers, and obviously there's another signing period come up where I think there's a couple more that we might would see, you know, from a freshman class perspective come in and join the football program. But I mean this roster in 1 year's time, just the amount of increase in talent I think is impressive, you know, and obviously, again, it doesn't just start at the quarterback position, which I think it's gotten immensely better with the addition of Rattler. But, you know, you're looking at guys that, you know, guys that have decided to come back, you know, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Zach Pickens could have been a guy that decided to forego and enter the NFL draft, but decided again, as we talked about a second ago, buying into the culture, coming back. Just trying to leave a legacy at a place like South Carolina, you know, the Brad Johnsons, the RJ Rodericks. I mean, these guys were important pieces for this 2022 roster, to where, you know, like you said, Rob, look, that game in Fayetteville week two next year, it is going to be a measuring stick game. It's going to be one of those, you know, cliche early season games that really tells you where you are, where a team is. Fayetteville's a hard place to play. You know, and this Arkansas program that Sam Pittman has built the last 3 years is really, really, really good. They looked good in their bowl game against Penn State. So that's going to be a huge quality matchup on the road. And then you got Georgia at home. So, you know, there's a two big early SEC play tests. But even if South Carolina does drop the game at Arkansas and does lose to Georgia at home, I don't think it hurts them as much as it would have maybe this year.
Corey Diaz covers the Gamecocks Athletic Department for the Greenville News. Joins us every Monday on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate. All right, last question, and then I want to pepper you with a couple of national championship game questions, Corey. Spencer Rattler obviously coming over from Oklahoma, and the dude has a little bit of a reputation, obviously. I don't think he helped it all that much by transferring out of Oklahoma, though I do understand his decision. There have been videos of him in high school coming out where he seems to be a bit of a hothead, a bit arrogant, a bit egotistical, but also seems to have a really good relationship with Shane Beamer. It was enough to get him to transfer over to South Carolina. I know that he has been in Columbia now. He posted a picture on social media last week from inside of Willie B. Has there been any outside of I saw the Garnet Trust interview with him, but have there been sightings around Spencer Rattler? Like, is he in town? Is he buying in? And what's the feeling about him, both from you and your colleagues covering this team and from the general fan base of Gamecocks fans in Columbia?
Yeah, you know, he was actually on campus, you know, late last week. He finally took a visit. He took an official visit to University of South Carolina, a place where he had already signed before he'd even stepped foot on campus before. Another one of those just like weird, quirky things. But, you know, again, I mean, you know, as we talked about, you know, it's that coach to player relationship, right? And Shane seems to have a really good grasp on just really selling a program, you know, getting kids to buy in. And but no, man, I mean, look, when I get in my car, like I drove to the bank this morning, get out of my car, drive to the bank. I know the teller at my bank that's literally right around the corner from my apartment. And, you know, she knows that I cover South Carolina for the USA Today Network and the Greenville News. And, you know, she is a football fan herself. And, you know, the first time I went to the bank after the initial announcement of Rattler joining South Carolina, I mean, I go in and that's the thing that she wants to talk about. You know, I think that's the entire South Carolina Gamecock fan base right now is, and it's not, you know, to not say that any of the other positions on the team are of equal importance, because they all are, it's a team game, but look, quarterback's face of your program, quarterback really makes the machine go, right? And, you know, everyone is behind, you know, this decision to, you know, to bring Spencer Rattler in. And you know, Shane said something, you know, on during his signing day press conference that I think, you know, those who potentially doubt, you know, the potential of a negative, you know, impact that Spencer might would have on this football program. You know, Shane said, look, if I didn't know what kind of person he was, I wouldn't have brought him in. You know, we don't bring, you know, kids in off of just, you know, recruiting stars and profiles alone. Like, you know, they get him and his staff, they get to know these kids and they want the right people in their football program. And I think it's just telling enough that, you know, after he says that, you know, Spencer Rattler is signing. You know, I think that's an omen of, there may have been some immaturity in the past. There may have been some potential character issues in the past, but you know, what he knows about Spencer and how he feels about him, he feels that he's a guy that can come in and positively affect this football program. I think it's what everyone needs to focus on.
Corey Diaz covers the Gamecocks for the Greenville News, joins us here on the Rob Brown Show. We got about 2 minutes left, Corey. So just your thoughts. I've said, look, if Georgia wants to win this game tonight, it's got to be – they've got to play violently enough at the line of scrimmage that some of them get charged with assault and battery after the game is over, because you're not going to out-scheme Nick Saban in this game. Your only hope is to blow up his scheme and hope that they can't fix it while you jump out to a lead. What does Alabama, what does Georgia need to do if they want to hoist the trophy when it's all said and done?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Georgia, I mean, obviously that's a great point, Rob. I mean, look, we saw these two teams play each other in the SEC championship game just a little over a month ago, right? I think it was five weeks ago now. And yeah, I mean, Alabama, you know, their offensive line dominated the line of scrimmage. You know, obviously something that no one saw coming, especially with Jordan Davis and Tindall and those guys up front, Devontae Walker for Georgia. I mean, you know, just special talented guys. But you know, Alabama was up to the task. You know, they were, I think they heard a lot of the talk, you know, leading up to that game. And you know, they went out there with the mindset of they weren't going to be disrespected like that, you know, in the talking heads and the folks that, you know, put these prognostications together. And so to me, Georgia's biggest key is Kirby Smart. I don't think he can get in his own way like he's done against Alabama in the past. You know, the come from behind Alabama SEC championship with Jalen Hurts coming off the bench and leading Alabama to the win. I mean, there was that just crazy decision to try to fake that punt there around midfield, and it failed. Alabama gets the ball back and they go right down and they score. You know, it's things like that, you know, things that, you know, in the national championship game 4 years ago, you know, Georgia's up, I believe, 10-0 at halftime. They come out, and instead of continuing to being the aggressor, Kirby decides to lay back and goes, look, we're just going to run the ball, and if we 3 yards in a cloud of dust, we just punt it away. Well, again, coaching strategy bites them in the, you know, rear end. So Georgia's biggest key is Kirby Smart. They have to put their foot on the gas and keep it there. And then for Alabama, you know, I think it's on their defensive side of the ball. You know, I think that, you know, their secondary has been not to the Nick Saban level that we've seen in his 15 years at Alabama. I think this secondary has been pretty suspect all year long. So if they can, if they can get Stetson Bennett to, you know, throw the ball in tight windows, not really give him a whole lot of numbers in order to which to throw to, you know, I think that could be a big key for Alabama to ultimately win this game tonight and get its second straight national championship.
Corey Diaz is the host, joins us here on the Rob Brown Show. He writes and covers the Gamecocks athletic department for the Greenville News every single Monday. He comes and chats the football. Corey, my man, appreciate it always, big dog. We will talk to you next week when we got a championship crowned.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you guys. Y'all take care. Talk to y'all soon.
You got it. That's Corey Diaz from the Greenville News. Follow him on Twitter at Corey Diaz, CoryDiaz _TGN, as in the Greenville News. Let's take a break. When we come back, Savannah Lee covers the Georgia Bulldogs for FanSided. We'll ask her what Georgia needs to do against the onslaught of Alabama's offense. We keep our championship game coverage rolling. Reminder, we are your home for the College Football National Championship game this evening. Exclusive play-by-play coverage here and only here on ESPN Upstate. Back after this, this is the Rob Brown Show.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, let's welcome in a returning friend to the show. She is now the editor of Dawn of the Dog, the Georgia website on Fans Sided. You have heard her many times talking golf. Now we talk some college football with Savannah Lee, who gets back on the program. Savannah, so good to have you back. What's happening, girl? How are you?
I'm just trying to keep it together. It's like 7.5 hours still, and I'm just like, can we not have this game at 8 o'clock? Can we just do it now? Because it's a nervous wreck. It's Georgia fans, we're all just nervous wreck.
In fairness, I'm just trying to keep it together is like my mantra for life. So if this is all you got, you're in good shape. Savannah Lee joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate. She, now you're a Georgia grad, correct?
Yep, Georgia grad, Grady grad, December 2018.
Very nice. Very nice. So let's start with this. And it's the question I have seen people hit you with on Twitter, and I have seen you react here and there. Obviously, the narrative, whether you like it or not, Savannah, is that Kirby Smart's dogs just can't seem to get it done in the big one. They have squared off with Alabama a couple of times in SEC championship games, national championship games, and Saban's got the better end every time so far. What makes this game different? How does Kirby Smart get over the hump in this one?
Well, Georgia usually only has to take them on one time a year, and when they do, it's usually going the Alabama Crimson Tide's way, 7 in a row for them, but there's something different about having to take on a team twice in one season. Georgia did it in 2017 with Auburn, and we saw what happened then. And so I'm not saying that this Alabama team is like that Auburn team or anything like that, but when a team gets an opportunity to take it on another one for the second time, it means they get another chance to fix what they did wrong. And Georgia did a lot wrong in that first game of, you know, giving up 500 total offensive yards and 41 points again. And so the defense has really got to show up, and then, you know, Georgia's got to be able to play within themselves. As cliche as that sounds, it's something that has worked for them all year long. They've kind of silenced out the noise and focused on themselves and getting better and not letting any of the quote-unquote rat poison in. And I feel like they've done a really good job since the Michigan game of doing that and feeling like this is another business trip. We're not going to celebrate the Orange Bowl. We're not only going to celebrate if we win a national championship. And so I think the way that Kirby gets over the hump is by staying focused and staying on themselves instead of trying to beat Alabama, just, you know, go out there and play another ball game and forget it that it is, you know, not necessarily an arch nemesis, but the one team that Georgia cannot seem to get over. But hey, two times in one year, it's just, you know, something's got to give, right?
Sure. You'd like to think so if you're Kirby Smart. So here's what I said about it, Savannah. I want to get your thoughts on this. I've said a couple of times that Alabama played the best game they've played all year in the SEC championship game against Georgia. I think they were better in that game than they were against Cincinnati. I think if that same team shows up against Cincinnati, they beat them by 35. The good news for Georgia is that teams only have one best game of the year. The bad news is you don't know if Alabama's going to get better tonight. My thought is that Georgia's defensive line, which I think has been the heartbeat of this team all year long, Georgia's defensive line needs to play so aggressively violent at the point of attack that some of them are pulled up on charges of assault and battery after the game is over, because you're not going to out-scheme Nick Saban. The only thing you can do is blow up his scheme. The only thing you can do is create chaos at the point of attack and try to get Alabama to fall apart a little bit. Do you think we will see the hyper-aggressive Georgia Bulldogs tonight?
I think so. I think Georgia got away from being themselves in the SEC championship game. They did some different things with the secondary, and then there were a lot of different spying schemes and stuff that they did with that front seven that just didn't work, and they never really adjusted. It's like they got smacked in the mouth, and they're like, oh, no one has smacked us in the mouth all season. What do we do with this? And I think that's what they worked on from December 4th to now, is, you know, remembering who they are and everything. But, yeah, I do. And if you want a very interesting stat that I keep using this week is quarterback hurries. I think quarterback hurries is going to be a big stat in this ballgame because Georgia barely got any pressure against Bryce Young the last time these two teams played. But the entire season, Georgia has 233 quarterback hurries. And if you want to compare that to Alabama, they only have like maybe 50. So that kind of puts it into perspective. When Georgia is pressuring a quarterback, they're doing something like you're saying, causing chaos and causing havoc for opposing offenses, and that's what they got to do. They had 30 quarterback hurries against Michigan, and we saw what happened there. So if Georgia can put pressure on Bryce Young, that's going to be one of the biggest keys, in my opinion, is whether or not. Because if they don't, he's going to have a field day because Georgia's secondary is the weakest point. But if they do, it could be a long night for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Savannah Lee joining us here on the Rob Brown Show. She's the editor of the Dawn of the Dogs website for fan-sided covering Georgia. And I guess that was the big mystery about that first SEC championship game. Georgia stacked across the defensive line, but that defensive line unit basically was a non-factor in that game. Now, I've gone back, I've watched that SEC championship game a couple of times, and it was the best Alabama's offensive line has played all season long. Now they got 2 weeks to look at Georgia. Can Georgia's defensive line show up tonight? Can they be better than they were in the SEC championship game?
I think so. Jordan Davis even made it a point this week to talk about how his conditioning has gotten better, and he's made it a point to increase conditioning so he doesn't look as tired as some people say that he did against Alabama in the first time they played. But I also want to mention that Alabama's got a couple guys on their offensive line that are banged up. So it isn't really sure if they're going to play tonight or how good to go they are. And so Georgia's got an advantage there because the Dogs are healthy. For like the first time all season, Georgia is actually healthy. And so the defensive front has a slight edge there. I'm going to need Jordan Davis to really put some pressure on and open some holes up to allow N'Kobe Dean and Channing Tindall to bust through and put pressure on Bryce Young. But that defensive front, if they can get the push, it's going to go Georgia's way because they are one of the best, if not the best, defensive front in college football. And that's the key. That's the bottom line, is when Georgia puts pressure on guys or gets that push up front is when they are the most successful. And they're going to have to play mean. They're going to have to play with that chip on the shoulder like they did against Michigan, because no one thought Georgia was going to do anything. They thought, oh, well, okay, they got beat in the SEC championship game. Now we see the typical Georgia team that we do on the big stage. And, well, they slapped Michigan in the mouth too and proved that wasn't the case at all, that they refocused and regrouped. And I will say, like, this senior leadership that's on the defense, Jordan Davis, N'Kobe isn't a senior, but he might as well be because he's probably going to the NFL draft. You got Nolan Smith and all those guys. They know what it takes to win this ball game, and they know that they have the capabilities to. It's just time for them to quit focusing on the outside noise and focus on themselves. But to kind of answer your question, instead of continuing to ramble on and repeat myself, Georgia's got to get that push. If Jordan Davis gets that push, it allows Jalen Carter to kind of put more pressure on him on one side, or Devontae Wyatt. And another thing is they got to, you know, force Bryce Young to make a mistake. And that starts with the defensive front too. So there's a couple things, but hopefully that answered your question instead of just being kind of a rambling mouth.
let's flip it over to the Georgia offensive side of the football, right? Well, like, we know what Alabama can do. They got a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback. They've got a running back that put up over 200 against Cincinnati, although Cincinnati oddly choosing to run a three down lineman front as their base defense. On the flip side of the ball, obviously, Georgia's going to have to go score for score with Alabama this evening. There has been a lot of questions about Stetson Bennett IV. And outside of the Bama game, Stetson's really answered all of them. But it's like every time I turn channels here at the Palatial Ingalls Market Studios, I see another talking head going, oh, I don't think Stetson Bennett's got it. I don't think Stetson Bennett's got it. Well, he went out there, he had it against Michigan, and they blew the Wolverines out of the water. That being said, Michigan is not going to bring the pressure Alabama brings tonight. What do you expect to see out of that young man trying to prove himself? Or, I've seen a lot of his quotes, does he care about proving himself?
I don't think he does, but at the same time, I think he does because as the noise is so loud, not from just the talking heads, but a lot of Georgia fans too. And it's kind of sad that Georgia fans can't just rally behind a quarterback because the coaches say that he gives us the best chance to win. And obviously he does. What he did against Michigan is just about everything you need to ask for out of a quarterback. He had a couple suspicious throws, but that's Stetson. That's kind of what he does. That's just one of his tendencies and a habit that he's been working on trying to break. But I think this young man has everything it takes to lead this team to a national championship. If the offensive line is able to give him enough time, which sometimes they give him too much time, which is when he tends to make a mistake. So he's just got to remember about his decision-making skills. If he sees somebody, trust his throwing ability because he does have it. I don't care how tall he is or how strong he is or anything like that. He's proven time and time again he can get the long ball to Brock Bowers or George Pickens and the one catch in the Alabama game and Ladd McConkey and all of them. Like, the kid has the intelligence to do this. He has the talent to do this. And now it's time that he trusts himself. And I think the Michigan game was a big, big improvement on him trusting himself because he was able to throw it over 30 times. 31, he went 31, 30 of, no, 20 of 30. That's right. That's the correct stat. 20 of 30 for 313 yards and three touchdowns. I mean, he threw for over 30 passes. And everybody's like, oh, he can't win a game if he does that. Well, he did. And 66% completion, that's exactly where you want to be on a stage like this. So if the offensive line can contain Will Anderson and company, I think Stetson's got the capabilities to do so. But he also has to remember he's got legs, and that's one of the reasons why he is starting quarterback over JT Daniels is his ability to tuck it and run it and get key first downs, which he did against Michigan, which he did all season. So that's going to be something he needs to do as well. It's just a big confidence thing in him and reminding himself, like, who cares if it's Alabama? It's another opponent, which I think he said this week anyway. It's just another opponent, and that's the best way he can take it, because if he thinks about it as being Alabama, the big bad Alabama is when he tends to try to overcompensate. He doesn't need to overcompensate. He just needs to play his game.
Last one for you, Savannah Lee, and it's the name that I absolutely think is going to be the difference maker tonight for Georgia if they find a way to win this game, and that is Brock Bowers. The dude is an absolute matchup nightmare for Georgia. He is a dude that can catch anywhere on the field, particularly good, surprisingly, deeper down the field and across the middle. Alabama, it runs a scheme that very frequently has linebackers in one-on-one coverage against tight ends. If that dude can get, let's say, 80 yards of receiving tonight, I think Georgia's got a good chance to win this game. Who is your key to the offense, and is it him?
Brock is one of the keys. I think that Georgia needs for him to continue doing what he does. But they also need somebody like a James Cook to kind of match that, because I guarantee you Alabama's going to find a way to try and contain Brock. But when they do, that's going to leave somebody else wide open, or able to, not necessarily wide open, but able to kind of cause havoc themselves. And James Cook did it against Michigan, and I'd love to see him take advantage of this opportunity on a big stage to leave a legacy as a senior and do it. But George Pickens is someone else that I think doesn't necessarily have to have like 10 catches for 80 yards or anything. Like, just get him two or three good opportunities to make a big play downfield, and that's going to be enough for him to leave a lasting impact, because when he's on the field, they know, and they have him double covered because they know how talented he is. So if he can get just two, three top catches that are for first downs or for even, maybe a touchdown, that would be a big, big thing. I'd love to see that out of Jermaine Burton too. Georgia's got so many weapons now that they're healthy. It's going to be fun to see how Todd Monken kind of crafts up a good game plan. I'd love to see something creative like he did against Michigan with Kenny McIntosh throwing to A.D. Mitchell for a touchdown pass. I'd love to see something like that tonight too. But the key player, I'd love to see James Cook just kind of take control of the running back situation, not just the running back stuff, but being a playmaker through the air as well for Stetson.
You can find Savannah Lee on Twitter at SportsGirlSL. You can also find her work at Dawn of the Dog. That's DAWG.com, where she covers the Georgia Bulldogs. Savannah, good luck tonight. 3.5-point favorites are Georgia, so Vegas believes in you. We'll see how it plays out. We'll talk to you next week about it. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it. Good job.
There you go. That's Savannah Lee. And you know what I appreciate about her? She didn't bark at us. I have seen videos of
Is that a thing?
The Georgia fans bark at you.
I was not aware that's a thing.
And not like a little bit. Not like a little bit. Like they bark at you. It's very weird. But they love it. It's passion, baby. It's College Football National Championship Day. You're home for the College Football National Championships right here on ESPN Upstate. Your home for the national championship game is right here on ESPN Upstate, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, indeed. You can hear every snap of that game right here on the Big Stick this evening, kickoff at 8 p.m. By the way, real quick.
Our coverage begins at 7 p.m., by
That's right. Coverage as soon as Mark Ryan goes off the air. Kickoff at 8. You can hear it all right here on ESPN Upstate. Bob Bowlesby of the playoff committee has spoken out. The athletic directors and those on the committee are meeting in Indianapolis right now where they're having conversation about expanding the playoffs. And according to Ross Dellinger writes for Sports Illustrated and SI Now, Dellinger is reporting that the presidents that are on the secondary committee have asked the commissioners to keep working on agreeing to an expansion model. Apparently, Bob Bowlesby said that they are frustrated that they cannot reach a deal. And the story coming out of Indy right now is that the only thing that is separating the commissioners on striking an agreement for expansion of the playoffs is automatic qualifiers. Basically, the commissioners of the big conferences want guarantees that the big conference champs will get in, whereas the smaller conferences are saying absolutely not. You should not get an automatic bye. We should still go by the best 8 or 12 teams, not give away spots to conference champions who wouldn't ordinarily otherwise be in the mix, and they have hit an impasse there. Does not mean these are the end of the conversations, but Bill Hancock said, quote, "We are going into overtime," and Bob Bowlesby described it as saying, quote, "Have you ever seen the movie Groundhog Day?" End quote. So
basically the SEC doesn't want automatic qualifiers.
No, the impression I'm getting is that the Power Five conferences do want automatic qualifiers, but they only want Power Five conferences to be eligible for AQs. So basically the SEC champ is in no matter what. And I suspect the reason they want that is they don't want to end up in a year. And again, it's unlikely, but it's not improbable. They don't want to end in a year where a 3-loss SEC East champ knocks off a 1-loss major SEC team out of the West. So like a 3-loss Florida team knocks off an undefeated Alabama team in the SEC championship game, drops Alabama down, and feel like they are not getting both of those teams in. They want an SEC champion to get an AQ, and also any other team that is inside of that top 10 to be able to get in as well. So, appears to be a bit of gridlock. The smaller conferences are fighting against AQs. The bigger conferences fighting for them, but they are still in conversations, and I don't believe those conversations are slated to end until later on this week. We'll keep you up to date on that as they continue to develop. Let's take a break, come back, wrap up hour number two. Hour number three, Lonzo and I go on the record with our championship game day predictions right here on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate. Carolina fans on Twitter losing their minds. Fire Matt Rhule and hire Brian Flores immediately. And I got to tell you, I would, like yesterday. Cam Newton was asked if he would come back. He said he is happy to play the role of backup if that's what's required of him. But he said it's all about winning. He said, "I'll tell you what, I ain't coming back for no 5-12, end quote. So Cam's gone. Cam's out. Texter says ESPN automatic qualifying is dumb. The whole thing is dumb. Go back to the bleeping BCS computer model with no bull boat eye test and put the best 8 or 12 teams in as listed It's literally that simple.
I think there's some robot presence on the text line wanting to go back to the robots. Just saying.
The further we get away from the BCS, the more people seem to look at it with nostalgia. We'll talk about that in the next hour. And Lonzo and I go on the record with our national championship picks next on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.